Hey listener, ever wondered how a player prepares for a big game? Or how he keeps his emotions in check when the crowd is going crazy chanting his name? Or moreover, how does he get down from that euphoria? Well, in today's episode, we have all that answered. Sandeep from Bangalore speaks to Eric Parthalu of Bengaluru FC, who's experienced all of this. Well, what are you waiting for? Dive right in.
So, just wanted to check with you, Eric. How are you feeling now? Enjoying your time here?
Yeah, it's been great. As I said before, we haven't really achieved anything yet, so it's nice to feel good about ourselves being in this position. And, you know, everyone's in a good place right now, mentally, physically. But it's just a point and a matter of getting that going and continuing that. But, yeah, I'm happy here. It's been a good journey so far, and, yeah, hopefully we can finish it off on a good note.
Any standout moments so far, your experience at BSC here?
They've all been good. You know, even the games we've lost games has been exciting. I think that's what the thing that's it draws people to the Indian Super League is that it's exciting football. It's not boring 0-0 draws. You know, there's a lot of goals involved, and there's games in quick succession. So there's always different teams out, like, you know, different squads and players. And yeah, for me, obviously, the goals are always good, but, you know, winning against teams that are close to you on the table, that's probably the standout moments for me. Obviously, I didn't play the last game against Goa, but it would have been nice to play that one. Beating Chennai in Chennai was a big result for us and a big confidence boost, so that was a highlight. So hopefully there's a few more before the end of the year.
How do you feel about that goal you scored a couple of days ago?
No, it was good. It was funny. I did something similar in the warm up, not from that far out, but and I kind of said to myself before in the dressing room before I went out, like, why can't you do that in a game? And because you score a good goal in the warm up, you think, oh, I can do it. But it's just a matter if the chance arises. And lucky for me, I ran onto the ball and it set up nicely for me, and I just knew that I was always going to shoot. And lucky for me, the keeper wasn't that tall, but I mean, I don't think a tall keeper would have saved it either, because it was right in the top corner. So it was a great strike, and hopefully I get another one in the Indian Super League.
Can you give a few details on how this move came about?
Yeah, my career's been, you know, dotted around a little bit of Asia and Australia and Scotland. So I've been a little bit of a journeyman, and I was a free agent for about 4 or 5 months. And the opportunity to come to Bengaluru presented itself around about June. And it was something that we had other options, possibly to go back home and play in Australia or continue in Asia. And I wanted to continue in Asia. And I obviously knew about the AFC Cup success more than anything that they had the year before. And quite funnily enough, I was actually in Qatar playing for a team there when you guys were playing, when BFC were playing in Doha for the final. And I actually saw John Johnson walk past me in the hotel. I didn't know who he was at the time, but I knew Cameron Watson, the other Aussie boy that was here. And I remember saying to my wife, I'm pretty sure it's one of the BFC players that's playing with Cam. And yeah, fast forward 12 months later, we're good mates and roommates in the, you know, in the team. So, and then from there, it was just a matter of, you know, coming across and, you know, joining the team for a new experience in the Indian Super League. At the time, we were in the quarterfinals of the AFC Cup, so it was exciting to come and join, you know, at that stage in the competition. And I think no one would have predicted how successful it's been up until now, but I always knew that in myself personally that I had a lot to give and I had a lot to show, and hopefully I've gone a little way in doing that.
Did you speak to Cameron Watson or someone before coming here for the experience and what you're expecting from him?
Yeah, absolutely. I spoke to him, you know, 3 or 4 times on the phone, and whenever a new question came up for me or from the missus, I was, you know, straight on the phone to him, and he was fantastic about everything, and made my move here so easy, because I got here and I knew what I wanted, I knew where I wanted to go and what I needed to do to get comfortable. But that's always the hardest thing. If you move to any country in the world, it's about trying to get comfortable and you know, getting your routine. Football is a creatures of habit. You always have to get into a routine, and you're training at the same time, you're eating at the same time. But if your home life is not settled, then it's very difficult. And I feel as though me and my wife are very settled here, so it's been good.
And when can you talk about the initial days when you started playing football back home?
My initial days, yeah. Well, I obviously started as a young pup, probably 4 years old, in the backyard with my brother. He's 9 years older than me. He only played at a amateur level. And just chasing him around the backyard with my dad and always wanting to be like them. And then, yeah, playing all the way through from the age of four till now. It's just been one long training session, it feels like. Because I haven't stopped. I started taking it really seriously around the age of 9 or 10. And you get picked up by your representative teams, your state teams, your national teams, and you go through that system. And luckily for me, I went through the right pathway, which led me to basically going overseas to Scotland at 19. And I was trialling in England before that, and it just so happened there was a chance to go to Scotland, and I signed a contract there in Scotland, and I scored on my debut there, and ended up staying for 4 years in Scotland. So it was another adventure. That's how it all started, and you don't get a lot of time to look back as a professional. So yeah, I'm 31 now, so like in a couple of years I'd like to look back and just take it all in and write a book maybe, or write a few things down. It's been a pretty long journey for me.
Like you said, you had a journeyman career in this art, like you've been to so many places. So what can we expect from the book, your experiences? How has it been in so many different countries and cultures?
Yeah, it's been a great experience, and one that I wouldn't change for the world, because a big part of me wishes I just stayed at the one club in, you know, a great country with a great football and reputation. Unfortunately, Australia hasn't really got that. It's, you know, the third or even the fourth biggest sport in Australia. And, you know, financially, the opportunities in Asia now are more attractive, and it's only a short career, so you have to make the most of it. And I was quite lucky with a plus one Asian spot for a lot of these countries. You know, you're three foreigners plus your Asian spot, and they kind of like tall defensive players. So luckily for me, I've always had a chance. But yeah, every country's different. And you have to respect the culture, you have to come with an open mind, and you have to enjoy it, because if you don't, then you may as well go and play in your own country and stay in your own little bubble. And I feel a lot of footballers still do that in Australia. They're comfortable to stay in their own little comfort zone, which is just fine. But for me, it was never about that. It was about how far can you go, how far can you push yourself, and yeah, how much money can you make out of the game, as opposed to just settling. And it's not always about money, but it becomes an issue when, you know, you start thinking about your future. So for me, it's better to stay in Asia for sure.
And in comparison to the football infrastructure, culture, performance, talent, where do you put India in all the countries that you place? How far behind or how equal or whatever are we?
No, I think it's growing, which is the most important thing that everyone has to realize. It's not, I'm not going to say it's the same level as a South Korea or as low as somewhere, you know, even worse than India, because it's growing. That's the way everyone should look at it. I mean, if you look at the quality of players from the first season in the ISL to now, I mean, there's a lot more quality. The players are at a younger age. You're getting decent foreigners that are giving you a good return, rather than just guys who are here for a payday to retire for 3 months. And the league's only going to get better. The team rankings improved for the national team. So everything seems to be moving in the right direction. In terms of the youth level, you can see boys even at the, you know, the amateur level in the mornings, training at 7 o'clock in the morning. They're technically better than all the Aussie boys I see at their age. So technically, I think they're, if not better, all the same as someone like in Australia. But obviously the coaching, that's where it needs to improve, because you've got this next generation of players coming through, like your Sunil Chetris and guys like this, who are in their twilight of their careers, and you expect them in the next 5-10 years, if they're going to go into coaching, they're going to have a great you know, give back to the youth. I'd imagine them to try and go into something like that. And now, before, you've got, you know, the league wasn't as professional, and it was just about playing games and a bit off the cuff, whereas now you have a bit more structure, you have a bit more of a curriculum. And there's more games being played. They need to play more games. And it's good to see our B team involved in a competition, which is playing against men, you know. So it's all improving. It's all growing. And I think it's going to get better.
And you Under Roka, you play a specific style of possession football. Do you think that suits you, or do you have a better? Do you think something else, a little bit more direct, suits you better?
It's difficult to answer that one because Albert's changed quite a lot of his formations, and it's worked for us because teams, I don't think, can work out what we're playing. Every formation we've pretty much played, from 4-3-3 in the AFC Cup to 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1, 4-5-1, 5-4-1. We've played almost everything, and we've been quite adaptable, which is quite good for us. I never thought I'd be good in a 4-4-2, but when I've played in a 4-4-2 this season, it's been our best performances and our most productive performances. So right now he's playing a different system. So I mean, I'm just happy to play. Wherever he wants to put me, I'm happy to play. And obviously I didn't play the last two ISL games, so I'm itching to get back involved in that, as opposed to playing in the AFC Cup. But whatever he plays me in, I'll have to respect.
And if we often see you press, start the first press from the midfield. You go forward, or sometimes Lenny goes forward. Yeah. I think you take turns in going and doing the press. Can you explain why press from the second level instead of from the striker?
It just depends where the ball is. It depends, you know, on the body position of the opposition. I mean, you can't give too much away, but I think, yeah, the first press always starts from the strikers. But sometimes if you get an inkling that someone's maybe turning out to play backwards, then everyone kind of steps forward. And that's kind of, like, I guess, the Barcelona theory he brings to the squad is that if you watch the way Barcelona play, yeah, they're attractive in possession, but a lot of their goals are scored in that final third of theirs by winning the ball back and counter-attacking and playing, you know, one and two touch to score a goal. So that's the best way to score a goal, and the easiest way to score a goal is to just wait to pounce on a mistake.
And you've scored a lot of goals, especially headers from corners, free kicks.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they're now trying to work you out? Is it more difficult now?
That's why I've not scored in the ISL since round three, because, everyone knows to mark me now. But the good thing about that is it provides a chance for other people to score goals and to get chances. And I've still had chances in games, maybe not as clear as the other ones, but it was nice to get one in the AFC Cup. It gave me a little bit more confidence that I can still do it. But I always try to aim to sort of have 4 or 5 goals a year, especially from set pieces, but it was nice to get one in open play. And I'm hungry to get more. I want to get more before the ISL finishes. So we work on set pieces, and it's all about the delivery. It's all about the movement. And, you know, sometimes it's a complete lucky dip with set pieces. So, we'll see how we go.
What is the mentality with which you enter the football field? Because you spoke about sometimes reading the body language and everything.
Yeah.
So how do you manage to not show your insecurities and stuff?
Yeah, it's definitely changed for me as I've got older. As a young boy, it used to be to try and get as revved up as possible. And I probably didn't think enough in my head about what I was doing, and just to try and be really aggressive and not think too much. And that kind of affected my game to be quite inconsistent and erratic, and it definitely suited me in Scotland because that's the way that they play. Everyone, you know, off the cuff type thing and getting stuck in. But as you get older, you learn to sort of calm your emotions, particularly when you go on the pitch before the games. I'm not a nervous person, but when I'm sitting around all day waiting for the game, you have to control your anxiety to get to the right level at the right time. If you're thinking about things too much, it takes your energy away. So by the time you get to 8 o'clock, you're really tired. So I have I found out a way to motivate myself at the right time now. And it's kind of, relax all the way up until you get to the stadium. Then it's focus on what you have to do. I write a few things down every game, before every game, what I want to do and, you know, what I'm going to try and do on the pitch, and put some music on. Get to the ground. I don't go out to the pitch. I don't like to walk around and talk to people and shake hands. I'm focused on the game. I don't care who I'm playing against. And then the warm-up's about getting prepared mentally, prepared physically. And then before the game, I don't like to say too much in the dressing room apart from speaking to one or two boys. I'm not one of those loud guys. I used to be, but now I know that's a waste of energy. And as soon as I get on the pitch, I'm probably one of the first ones to be vocal, and I have to be in my position. So that's the way I approach the games now. And then I don't take it for granted, the 90 minutes.
And you sit just behind the defense.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you play, as a screen.
Yeah.
In that position, like, how difficult is it, because you have so many things running around and you have to be the one who makes the call to step mm-hmm. forward or not, you or John?
Yeah, well, in the back line, it's John and one arm, they control the back line. But for me, it's the one, well, not the one position, but the most important position to be in a 360 degrees angle, because if you play on the left, all you've got to worry about is to your right and to your left. Doesn't matter about behind you. The hardest thing about for a midfielder is what's behind you, and it's always the question you have to ask yourself. So whether it's distance between the defence and the attack, you've got to sort of get yourself in between there, and also the guy you're marking against, are you close enough to get to him if he gets the ball? And then if someone else gets the ball, you have to anticipate your distance and your body shape, so you know, is someone going to get close enough to you that you can play one touch, or can you turn, or you have to play it back? So you're constantly always thinking. But I think it suits my personality, because I like to have everything in control, and I like to always have plan A, plan B, plan C. And I'm still learning. I'm you know, every day at training, making mistakes. And if I don't look over my shoulder enough or get my body shape right, then someone will come and take the ball. Or so in the games, you have to get it right, because there's no chance for a mistake in the middle of the park. So you have to be 100% sure in that position. I think that's why I enjoy it. The pressure is on.
How exhausting is it mentally? Because, mm-hmm. you know, Victor Valdes, he once said that after games, he wouldn't have touched the ball. He's playing goalkeeper for Barcelona, probably never touched the ball. But mm-hmm. he's like, I have to concentrate so hard.
Yeah.
Because anytime they might pass back, because they just want to keep possession and stuff like that. So how he used to be exhausted at the end of the games.
Yeah.
How is it the same for you also in the midfield?
Yeah, absolutely. Every game's exhausting, whether you're playing against the Maldives and you're up 5-0 and there's 10 minutes to go. It's still exhausting, because you have to still switch on. For me, playing at 8 o'clock kickoff, I don't get to sleep till 2:30, 3 o'clock, and I have maybe 4 hours sleep and I'm up again. It's not a comfortable existence playing week in, week out, but it's something you love doing, particularly when you see results and you come in after a win and everyone's buzzing. You want to be around it, you know. But the majority of the boys are like that. You can't switch off after a game, because you have to get yourself up to that level. But you learn as you get older to, you know, there's no way in a game where you can get 5-0 up, like I said, and just take the foot off the pedal and go, oh, I haven't got to think about that, or I'll just control the games, so I have more energy tomorrow. It's never like that. It's just give everything for that 90 minutes.
You have an amazing fan base here who will be chanting your name, singing mm-hmm. songs through the match. From that high, how do you, like you said, 2:30 is a long time. From what, 10 to 2, that's 4 hours, mm-hmm. 4.5 hours. Does it take you that long to kind of get back to your normal, because you're just buzzing?
Yeah, it's yeah. And I think, you know, you have to change your sleeping pattern, because it was the same in Australia. You'd play in the train every day in the morning, and you'd play at night time. So the days leading into the game, you have to almost, you know, get asleep in the afternoon and try and stay up later, so your body's ready for it. But when you hear the crowd, and I suppose when you have a bigger crowd, it's even harder to come down from, because it's more of a buzz, and I have to physically exert myself more to be heard as well. So when you're trying to shout something, you come off the pitch and your voice is gone a lot of the times. But that's what you love doing. I love being at home exhausted after 90 minutes, flat out on the couch and just zoning out after the game. I love it, because that's what you live for, you know.
So that was Eric Bartholu sharing his tale on Injury Time Extra. But hey, we're not done yet. Next week we get talking to Bartholu as he shares his journey with us. After all, he's one of those few guys who have traveled to both the North and South of Korea. So until then, have a great week and enjoy the game.